Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Central Library reopens this weekend after a three-year, $50 million renovation. The 1965 building retains its mid-century architectural look, yet was completely gutted and re-envisioned. Now the library features a makerspace with 3D printers, sewing machines, and a small recording studio. An educational space for educators as well as children alike. The latest technology in place all around the library, which is configured to be both flexible and adaptable for future technology. An inviting children's area with an outdoor garden and flexible meeting spaces that can serve anything from a boardroom to a private reading room. My guest today is Dr. Gary Schaefer, the CEO of the Tulsa City County Library System, to talk about the new Central Library and how he expects the new facility to be a focal point for the library system as well as the community at large. Central Library dedication and ribbon cutting takes place tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., and then the library opens to the public. Gary Schaefer, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us, and this is a big weekend for the City County Library System.
Thank you, Rich. It's great to be here. And yes, indeed, it is a great, great weekend for the City County Library System. I'd say once-in-a-lifetime type of event, but there are a few people that were actually here when we opened it the first time in 1965.
Now, the first outsiders and staff have been getting a good look at the building. What's been the reaction so far?
Wow. Literally. And sometimes their mouth is just agape, and you pick up the wow, but people are just blown away by how beautiful it is.
Now, what will be the biggest surprise patrons will find when they enter the new library?
Well, for me, the biggest surprise, which is not your question, but many people have already seen it, is the outside. The outside looks brand new, even though we all know it's a 51-year-old building. So that truly was the big surprise, but it shouldn't be. New windows, new glazing, new siding, new everything. So the travertine that wraps the balcony is still there. But I think some of the big wow is there's a lot of light that's being allowed back into the library, because when they first designed the building, Charlie Ward, who I believe you know, is here in Tulsa. He was the original architect, and he was in the building the other day. And when they first designed it, it was very light and airy in that mid-century feel, and it's restored to that. So it's very light, very beautiful, a lot of natural wood. I think people will be surprised by that, but it's just gorgeous.
Now, going back to the decision to renovate Central Library, of course, voters turned down an opportunity to build a new Grand Central Library. Have you been able to do everything in the renovation that you would have been able to do if you'd built a new library?
I like to think we were able to do more. One, if that had passed, we'd have a 10-year-old library right now down across the street from where our librarium site was. And some people would argue that's not quite downtown. So we are smack in the middle of the Renaissance happening in downtown. Libraries, I like to say, were born green, in the sense that before it was hip to be green, we were green. Before there was a sharing economy, well, we invented the sharing economy. So the libraries have often been on the forefront. But I think the building now appears to be a new building and was built for less than it would have cost to build a new building. And why not reuse? Why not reuse the building that we already have, the building that we now own, thanks to the County of Tulsa deeding it back to the library? And I think it makes sense. And I think it's a beautiful building, but I keep saying that. It's also a very functional building.
Well, I love the fact that it is of a period that doesn't get a lot of love architecturally, but it is a beautiful building for its time, and you've kept that look to it. So it looks like it's been there for 50 years, even though it's brand new.
In many ways, through the remodel. So it was. It's interesting to talk to folks that were there when it was first built in 1965, or during that, that were around during that time period, because they'll tell you, "Oh my goodness, those old buildings, the ones we love now, those old buildings, they were just so tired. We didn't like that at all. We wanted the space age. We wanted modern." And the building is, you know, the Jetsons would be right at home in our building. This is true. Especially now with, you know, much bigger screens and whatnot, and lots of computers and technology. But I think it's true to what it was. And there is, you know, I was touring some architects through the building yesterday, and there's a whole, as you know, modern architecture community here, and they are quite excited about the building. And I think it will, you know, people will definitely grow to love it if, you know, I think many will now.
I'm going to do a little architectural geekism for just a second, and we'll talk more about the building. But you were talking about how this was designed to be a light building. And basically, I think what happened was you had all this shrubbery and trees and stuff that sort of blocked out the light. So is the plan to keep it open, light, and airy?
Well, there are new trees planted and all that. But part of that cutting down on the light was actually an inside job. Throughout the years, offices were built and different things on different floors. And, you know, just natural to put that in front of a window, and then it cut down the light on the inside. So we've really, in redesigning it, and we work with a great design team on it, it was the offices on the floors, which are few now, are all on the north end of the building. So they're all kind of in a stack there for staff that need to be on those floors. And then remaining staff in the building, it is our administrative offices as well, are down on the lower level. So where folks will remember the media center was, that is now all administrative offices. And when we talked to Charlie before we started on it, you know, we were asking him lots of questions and, you know, why are the ceilings so low there? And he goes, those were supposed to be offices. And why aren't there any windows on the west side of the building? It's like, that was a parking lot. Who wants to look at a bunch of cars? You know, he had answers for everything. So it's great. But, you know, we've now, I think, you know, have put in a garden to the west of the library, a children's garden. And we've put in a new parking structure. And so, and the garden is in between that. And so we have windows and brings a lot more light into the building. And it's just really lovely.
In fact, you had your first event there last night, right?
We did, in fact. And it was so fun. I actually went up on the balcony while the movie was playing in the garden. Sound system is great. The movie was great, crystal clear. And watching people just some sitting in the garden, some laying on blankets in the garden. I mean, that's what we were hoping for. And it was just they were enjoying a movie and what was a beautiful night.
Now, will that garden be a focus for programming like that?
Absolutely.
Through the spring, summer, and fall?
Yes, as long as, you know, we're not at 110 degrees in Oklahoma. I don't know how many people want to be out there. But the building is actually designed, the heating and cooling system works with the garden in the sense that obviously it's not, you know, air conditioned to the inside temperature. But in the summer, it should be 10 degrees cooler in the garden, and in the winter, 10 degrees warmer. So
That's a cool function.
It is. It's a function of how the building environmental systems work and where they exhaust. Obviously not automobile exhaust. It's just from the building.
Right. Earlier, you were talking about how you could have built a new library, say, at 10th and Denver. Instead, you renovate the library at 5th and Denver. And when you look at the footprint of downtown, you're sort of on the limit of where downtown is revived. Do you think this will be a catalyst for further development to the south in downtown?
I think it will be, but I think many of the things that have happened are helping with that. So the Snyder family renovating the Aloft Hotel from former City Hall, the work that's been done so far in the Cox Business Center, and I think works that's to come, the city's foresight in putting in 5th Street onto the plaza, which I actually will think if ever a street will make an area more pedestrian friendly, this is where it will be because it was a bit of a no man's land before. And I really appreciate all the work the city did in getting that in there because our building was designed around it and they did a lot to do that. And, you know, also the voters who voted the funds to include the library in the Improve Our Tulsa initiative. And the city, I said this the other day, they delivered the money up front. They could have waited, but they got that to us so we could begin our project. And, of course, the philanthropic community here, which, you know, is legendary. And it was a 50-50 public-private partnership, and I really appreciate everyone who contributed to it. And then, you know, to have the backing of a library commission who, you know, work tirelessly as volunteers. I think no one has any idea how hard they work and how they show up at all times. And, you know, they had the foresight to go for this, go with this. They had the foresight to look outside of Tulsa. We have a local architect working on it, but we used an architecture firm that specializes in libraries. And then the library's 501c3, the Tulsa Library Trust, who, you know, went out and raised the monies. That it doesn't grow on trees, it turns out.
Well, if you would, you sort of gave us a sense of one small part of the building. What used to be the media areas, now the administrative offices. Can you give us sort of a virtual tour of what the library looks like now.
Well, sure. So when we walk in the front door, either off of the parking garage, that it's in the front door kind of tied in at one entrance, we have a lovely coffee shop that people can avail themselves
of. Now, where would this be in relations to the old building? Would it be up the second
level? This is actually, well, now, Rich, you're going to confuse your listeners because we've renumbered the floors. Charlie had originally numbered the floors as we have the floors now. So when you walk in, you're on the first floor, which is the main floor.
Right.
And so formerly the second floor. So we walk in, we have a coffee shop there. It can operate outside of the hours of the library. So it's open at 6:30 in the morning and closes at 10 at night. It's open 7 days a week. Hours are slightly shorter on Sunday. We walk in, there's some beautiful artwork. It's reminiscent of how it was before, the big atrium, the grand staircase, which is now the Peggy V. Helmrich staircase, fitting mm-hmm. for, as your listeners know, our big event and our big our patroness, quite frankly,
right.
Who has been with us through thick and thin and helped us so much. And then there's new spaces. There's a maker space. Folks, as they visit, might notice an interesting feel when they walk on the floors, and that's because they're walking on a raised floor. It's a raised technology floor on all the levels, which allows us to get electrical and data anywhere we need in the building. So that way the space is very flexible. So we have a maker space. We walk towards the back of that first floor, and there's an amazing children's area. I mean, the most beautiful children's area, but very functional. It has these interactive, not digital, but interactive literacy, early literacy. I'll describe them as towers, and that will just people go, what does that mean? And
you'll have to come see.
They'll have to come see for themselves.
Yeah.
The makerspace has everything from a 3D printer to sewing machines to a sound recording booth, which uh-huh. you and I talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And also has laser cutters. I mean, everything.
So it's a kind of a mini fab lab in a way.
And I would clarify mini because it is not the fab lab, and I think it's a place for people to get introduced to some of the great technology they have at the fab lab. And then I think it's very much the library is really in some ways designed for the novice in this case. And then when people find what they like, they can graduate up to the fab lab.
Will you work in partnership with the fab lab on lots of things involving this makerspace?
We plan to, and I'm putting a call out to them right now.
And you also mentioned things like sewing machines. So you're also looking at sort of crafts that are sort of being lost as a sort of a entry point for people to
absolutely. You know what I mean? It's hats off to the staff who, you know, they have been working tirelessly on this project. And just, I was in there last night, you know, and there were people that had been there at 7 o'clock in the morning that were still working, getting the technology up and going. But they also, you know, they've planned these programs that are just amazing, from make your own prom dress to for people who've never sewed before, quite frankly. And then, you know, digital programming, they're having a coding class, they're doing all kinds of things like that. So as we move up in the building to the second floor, we have a digital literacy lab, and we have right next to a literacy lab for our literacy department to use. And in the digital literacy lab, we have flight simulators. We have all kinds of different computer technology. If we have Macs, we have PCs, and for people to learn some higher skills on that. And it's not necessarily defined to an age. It's really set up. There will be teen programs, and this will be like a teen-only time, but then there'll be programs that are more geared towards adults.
And so, older adults who are sort of coming.
Well, we have a computer lab for that, for people who just are getting started with computers, mm-hmm. and we'll be teaching programs in there. And that's up on the third floor, along with our research center and the Oklahoma collection. But back on, too, we have a great space. The architect repurposed some square footage from the balcony. And we have four on each side of the building study cubes. And I think people have seen those as they've driven by. And those are really study rooms. There's a big demand for those in libraries. And really speaks to those are could really serve as a small reading room or a place where someone's just looking for quiet to read. They could check those out literally on their library card and use those. And then we have towards the front of the building, we've opened up the balcony out front. So if weather permitting, people can use that space. And then some larger meeting rooms. So lots of different meeting rooms, lots of different sizes. So when people ask, you know, when they want to book a space and they're asked, well, how many people? The reason is we want to put you in the room that's right sized.
And those I've seen these small reading rooms or meeting rooms in that's sort of a common feature now today in a lot of new libraries that are being built. Oklahoma City has some.
Yes.
Denver, just to name a couple that comes to mind immediately, have these little reading rooms. How are they used? Are they used by community groups? Are they used by business people that sort of want neutral ground?
All of the above. Well, the Library of Switzerland. So they're used by teachers that are doing tutoring or tutors working with students. They're used by small groups that are working on a project, either in school or for work, or say someone who works from home wants to meet with someone. You meet at the library. You book a study room and you meet at the library. Grab your coffee downstairs and then go to your meeting.
Yeah. My guest today is Gary Schaefer, the CEO of the Tulsa City County Library System. The Central Library reopens this weekend after a three-year process of renovating the library, $50 million renovation. Around that, I've seen everything from 45 to 55.
Well, it did come in under budget.
Yeah.
And I have one last space to talk to you about.
Okay. So, yeah, please do.
So the space I'm most excited about is named for a legend in education here in Tulsa. She's no longer with us, but her name was Pocahontas Greddington, and she was the first African-American administrator at Tulsa Public Schools. She authored four textbooks. There's lots of folks in town who knew her and know of her and know of her legend. She was also very involved civically with the predecessor to OCCJ and other things. So she was wonderful. So the Schusterman Family Foundation, Charles and Lynn Schusterman Family Foundation, named a space. It's on the second lower level of the library. It's the Pocahontas Greddington Center for Learning and Creativity. And it is really a space for educators to come together and for us to facilitate problem solving. So it's about creative problem solving, teaching creative problem solving, but also facilitating people as they address their challenges. When I moved to Tulsa, someone asked me early on if I could fix K through 12 education. And we like to say yes at the library, but I had to be honest and say that wasn't my educational background. But we thought about it and we thought, well, what if we created a space for educators and we facilitated their problem solving? And so we designed this space for that. It will also be used for student field trips. So we'll run them through some what's called ideation exercises. And then every day it will serve as an after-school homework center. It's a pre-registration program. We do it in several of our libraries, but we'll offer it there at Central as well. So it's a really dynamic, very flexible, interesting space, and you'll have to come visit it.
Yeah. That sounds like partnerships are going to be a major focus for the library with this new space.
Mm-hmm. We've already got meetings booked for big board meetings for reading partners. Impact Tulsa is booked to come in, and so we're still looking for our first educational group to come. Those are both educational groups, mm-hmm. but an actual school to book it as well, and we think that'll happen soon.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that became apparent when the original library was designed and built in 65, it was state-of-the-art at that particular time, but one couldn't imagine what would happen 30 years later when everybody's got a computer, everybody's got a smartphone now 40 years later. What sort of planning went into the renovation of the building to anticipate what's going to happen down the road? You mentioned the raised floor so you can move wires and technology and move technology anywhere in the building.
Yes.
But what sort of other thoughts went into anticipating what comes next?
Well, there was lots of staff were doing focus groups here in Tulsa, but they were also going out across the U.S. We were looking at other libraries, talking to library leaders. We actually work with a futurist. So there's actually library futurists to look at what the needs would be and what was the latest and greatest. And I think, you know, the big thing was designing it to be very flexible so that it could adapt and change. So, you know, where we have the media collections now, DVDs and CDs, 10 years ago, we quite frankly didn't think we would have those about now, and we still do. We do offer downloadable film.
Yeah, that's the other thing is now you're doing downloads.
Yeah, we do all that as well, but there still is a demand for this. But eventually that is probably going to go by the wayside. So that area could turn into a bank of larger sound recording studios for people to, you know, it's not, as you well know, it's not just music, it's oral history, it's all kinds of things. And so we really see that as a potential future going on in libraries. So, and libraries have always adapted. I mean, from libraries that had some of the first computers, we're using IBM punch cards at one point. I mean, we're just always looking for the latest trend, but you also have to be, it's got to be a trend. It can't be a fad, you know, so we're looking for how things are solidifying and then how do we adapt and change to grow with that.
Do you see the library system with this library being more a facilitator for other people to do these investigations? Like you mentioned oral history, so being maybe a repository for oral history, which we could see a library being that.
Absolutely.
Would you be a facilitator or more of an instigator?
It depends on, you know, what it is. So sometimes it's partner, and sometimes if it's more mission aligned, then we're the instigator.
Yeah. Now, one of the things you're anticipating, a doubling of audience for the new Central Library.
Yes.
Compared to the old Central Library. Mm-hmm. Now, how does that compare with attendance at the librarian? Because I would think, if anything, the attendance was less at the librarian than
it was, but the building was a fifth of
size.
Was,
yeah, so, right.
Uh-huh. So Central Library had 1,100 people a day coming through it, even in its, we like to say it was very well-loved, but it was very well-worn state. And so normally when you open any new library, you're going to see automatically a 40% increase. It just happens. But with the coffee shop and all these new services that we're offering, we really are anticipating a doubling of that. Are close to 2,200 people a day coming through.
I guess my question is, any chance that people having adapted to using their regional libraries and the more their local libraries will find that they're adequate for their needs?
They are welcome to do that because they're still all of our customers.
Right.
So as you bring up, I mean, we have 24 locations across the county, so we're the same size as Miami, Boston, San Francisco, Seattle Public Libraries.
Yeah, so. That's a great tribute to the city and the county.
And the foresight of the voters, the Library Commission, and the library founders, as you know, Allie Beth Martin, who the Martin Regional Library's named for, is legendary. I mean, there is a national award given every year called the Allie Beth Martin Award at the American Library Association Conference. I think Tolson should know that. I mean, and I think there are many people that know she was legendary. And the other is Alfred Aronson. I mean, the Aronson Auditorium is still in the library. It's grown. It is a beautiful room, but it's still a very flexible space. But those two people, you know, working with others, the friends of the library, lots of people that your listeners know and love, decided that this needed to happen. And so on my birthday, before I was born in 1961, they had put this forward and the voters voted it into being. And a few years later, 4 years later, the library was open.
You mentioned Aronson Auditorium. What's changed about that? Anything?
A lot. So it was octagonal in shape. It was a very interesting shape to this room.
Very interesting for music.
Yeah. Well, and I was told that they were looking at doing theater in the round, and they did do that for a few years, and then we were left with an octagonally shaped room for the next 48 years. But it's been squared off. There was cement poured in the corners. That's been jackhammered out. And then the ceiling, kind of the false ceiling that we have in most every building, was taken away, and lighting was put into the recesses of the ceiling infrastructure, or the floor infrastructure, the floor above. And so the room is bigger, but it feels twice as big as it was before. It isn't, but it has that feel to it, and it can hold a lot of people. You can go right from the parking garage if you're attending an event just in Aronson. There's a link from the parking garage that will be open that you can just walk right into the Aronson Auditorium, or you can come across from the top into the library and then go down. But it is it's a beautiful space. There is hearing technology, so your listeners that use a hearing aid that uses T-coil technology, we have that hearing loop in Aronson. It's on the main floor because, as you know, we do a lot of events there. It's in the garden. And it's in our executive conference room, which is also used by groups and nonprofits here in Tulsa.
Yeah. Now, will the Aronson Auditorium still be the focus for events? But it sounds like you have many other event space now.
It depends on the size of the event and the style of the event. So obviously, when we have an author that will command 700, 800 people, that's going to be on the main floor. We have again, flexibility. Mm-hmm. Furniture can be moved. It's on casters out of that main area. We can obviously seat for a plated dinner. I don't know why someone would want to do that the first weekend in December, but we can seat, you know, 400 people.
I believe that would be the Helmrich Award. Yes.
It is indeed. So we can seat for that. But then we have the garden area. So it kind of just, it depends on what the space is. And then also the Reddington Center is a very flexible space that can be set up for groups and that. So it just kind of depends on what the need is. And I anticipate we'll have multiple things going on many times.
And I assume with this new building, programming has got to ramp up, too, to support this new building.
The staff made a presentation to me the other day, and I was blown away by their plans for programming. I mean, they just have really thoughtful programs going on. I mean, everything from a story time in the garden to the story time room when weather doesn't permit it to be in the garden to, as I said, classes on sewing, coding, how to, you know, build robots. I mean, they're partnering with a lot of groups around the city to help bring this programming and a lot of great adult programming as well.
Now, this is the opening weekend. If you can very quickly just sort of go over the events for the opening
sure.
weekend. It opens to the ribbon cuttings at 10 tomorrow, right?
Right. We're doing we're dedicating the building and doing that starts at 10 a.m. The ribbon cutting is set for 11, though if we finish up early with the dedication, we're moving forward. And then we'll open the doors. We're going to do a little mini ribbon cutting for Starbucks at 6:30. That's kind of unofficial, but people could come if they wanted to. It's going to be fun, but we wanted to dedicate that space as well. And so we will do that in the morning, and then the building will be open with activities going on all day. We're closing Fifth Street. So we have a brand new bookmobile that a donor has made possible for us. And you know, it's we thought it appropriate to showcase that at the same time we're showcasing this new library because, as you know, there's many people that can't make it to the library, and the bookmobile is their primary source. So it is the latest and greatest in technology, and people can check that out as well on Saturday. And then the building is open 7 days a week from going forward until, you know, the next federal holiday. So.
Well, we wish you great success. I know a lot of people are anxious to see the footprint and what this new building looks like. And the Central Library has been a focal point for learning and interesting discussions over the years, and I'm sure it's going to be again.
Well, it truly will be, and people are going to be very wowed. And I can't say enough about, you know, the assistance, and not only from staff, but people in the community. And number one, Mayor Bob LaFortune. You know, I got to work with Bob. He was the capital campaign chair. He was a force to be reckoned with, and he raised this money in record time, and when we had a lot of other initiatives going on in the city that are just as important, and he made it happen. And so, you know, we're going to honor him tomorrow as well, and just everyone that's been involved in this project.
All right. Central Library opens tomorrow. Gary Schaefer, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
Gary Schaefer is the CEO of the Tulsa City County Library System. The library reopens Central Library after a 3-year, $50 million renovation tomorrow morning with a dedication and ribbon cutting getting underway at 10 a.m., and then the library opening to the public. For more information on the events and about the renovation, visit tulsalibrary.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.